Head on to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are already. Thorn in the Side, Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It's the home of what we like to call conversation radio. You can get the Horn simply by logging into the stream or, well, not even signing it, just clicking on the stream at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. The links are also at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And we are available at TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, and several others that I'm aware of but can't remember the names of. And we're still trying to sort out the whereabouts of the Horns listing or the mysterious disappearance of the Horns listing at iTunes Radio. I have no freaking earthly idea what happened. But I did go and I did look. And lo and behold, no, we're not listed there anymore, at least on the iTunes I have here. But be that as it may, we will press on. I have happy news to report. I announced at the end of the program last night that no combination of individuals had met Darlene's challenge for Wednesday night prayer meeting. I got up this morning and found out that it had, in fact, been met. So thank you very, very much. We had a number of contributions overnight that put us over the limit for, or over the top for meeting Darlene's challenge, which in fact does take me to the mailbag. Just because. Not everybody's listening live, and the folks who don't listen live deserve to be heard just as much as those who do. Okay? Let's see here. We'll start with this. You know, last night we heard from Bermuda. This morning we heard from Singapore. I won't use names because, well, yeah, okay. Hi, Bob. Thank you for your great work. So glad to hear a voice of sanity from your country. Good luck and best regards, Pim. Thank you very kindly. You see, that I think there is a desire to hear. Everybody knows that the American for-profit media are utterly, completely, totally, and without reserve corrupt. They're bought, they're paid for, and they are either intentionally or unintentionally self-censoring. It takes an independent voice. An independent broadcast operation. I'm not talking about my voice, you know. It takes an independent broadcast operation to be able to speak with some degree of candor about what is going on in this country. And we're gonna sort of, well, we always go there, but it seems like sometimes shows just write themselves. This is going to be one of those evenings. And I sometimes hate it because it just feels like you want to crawl under a table and, you know, curl into a fetal ball and wait for it all to pass. But you can't. We have to live in the world. It is the world that we find ourselves living in that is so godforsaken, disturbing. But thank you for the very kind words, Pim. Thank you. Singapore, you know. Now, I guess the downside of being independent and being able to not self-censor is that it's hard to get, you know, Preparation H or whatever, or Colgate toothpaste, or super sugar frosted chocolate bombs breakfast cereal to sponsor you. And that means, as we see, that if we want this kind of candor, if we want this unvarnished conversation, we have to be the ones who create it and sustain it. And so I am happy to announce that we are now $635 away from finishing out the month of August to the good. That's very, very good news. Because, as I have said, for reasons that don't fully bear going into, things have been tough, and they are only going to get tougher. I hope they get better, but I don't know. It's just difficult. So your kind contributions of support are more important than ever, and more appreciated than ever. Anyway, back to the mailbag. This from Michael. By the way, I saw an editorial cartoon today. I was over looking at the website of the Rochester Democrat and Gazette, and I saw an editorial cartoon of Todd Akin. And it reminded me that there really are those little moments where we say things into the ear of the universe that wind up in places we never would have imagined. I would love to give credit to the artist who drew this editorial cartoon, but I didn't stop to save it along the way. I'm sorry. But it was late night before last, and then I shared it with you last night, the note we got from Michael asking whether Todd Akin had declared hammer time, because he said his campaign was legit and he would not quit, therefore too legit to quit. That was Michael, night before last. Well, guess what the T-shirt said on the Todd Akin drawing in the editorial cartoon? That's right, too legit to quit. Hammer time. So this evening, we will begin with an email from Michael. He says, I keep wondering to myself... Now steel yourselves, because God knows if there were some sort of filthy little right-wingers out there, they actually took notice of the conversations that we have here, they'd be having a blue-purple polka-dotted conniption over this. I'm sure it would be good for several weeks of rabid single-handed typing, single-fingered typing over at Free Republic. They'd probably, I don't know, get out there, get a Brain Morans T-shirts and stuff. But Michael writes, I keep wondering to myself, has there ever been a hurricane in the history of hurricanes that had the potential to do so much good for humanity? I know this is probably an evil Pat Robertson-esque thought, and that I am a bad person as a consequence, but surely I'm not the only person to ponder this. I think we will probably get several communiques indicating that, no, Michael, you're not the only one to think of this. All you normal, decent people in the Tampa area, batten down the hatches. All you repiglickins, don't worry. It's not going to hit. Okay? I'm just saying. So no, Michael, you're not a terrible person. You're a person who's sick of the filth that these right-wingers pump into everything that touches our existence. Then there's this note that rolled in from Georgia. She says, I know this isn't Friday. It doesn't have to be, Georgia. I know this isn't Friday, but I couldn't contain myself because my blood is boiling. You may have seen this already, but I came across this picture today, and she attached it to the email. And it reaffirmed everything I think about the puffed-up lizard that calls himself the only living link to God. She's talking about the old Nazi Hitler Youth anti-aircraft gunner, you know, Benny the Rat. That, we're back to George's words now. That toad sucker has the hubris to sit on his throne and let people kneel in front of him to kiss his ring. Well, I saw this picture and it just broke my heart. It made me weep. Kiss his ring? Fat chance he can kiss my ass. He knows these things are happening and still sits resplendent in his Halloween getup, drinking his sacramental wine while the sacrificial lambs starve to death. I am so pissed off I'm seeing colors I never knew existed. The sad part is that he will probably live to be 100 and then be replaced by someone just like him. Millions of people bowing to a squatty little fat man with a Nero complex. The problem is that the superior race bullshit they ingrained in him when he was a good little Nazi is still there. When he dresses in his Empire waist gown, ruby slippers, and that house of... I was doing okay till I got to that part. When he dresses in his Empire waist gown, ruby slippers, and that House of Whoville hat, I'm sure he just thinks, let him eat cake. Odes to Agnes and love to all. Georgia. And the graphic to which she is describing, or to which she refers, I sort of ran those two ideas together there, is one which shows Benny sitting on his golden throne with his dress. He doesn't have his House of Whoville hat or his red Prada slippers that I can tell. That's on the left of the graphic. On the right of the graphic is a starving child carrying a starving child somewhere, presumably, in the Horn of Africa. Or maybe the Sudan. Underneath it, the words of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer. Go, sell everything you have, and give it to the poor. Mark 10:21. With an editorial comment underneath the photograph, I'm quite sure he could sell that golden throne at a very good price. Yeah, he could. But please to understand that this is a problem that has plagued Holy Mother Church for at least 1,000 years. You know, I told you I've been rereading, and it's a very dense book, and, you know, I'll read 5 or 10 pages a night before bed, and I'm not through it, but I've been rereading, because I read it the first time a long time ago, I've been rereading Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror, which is basically a chronicle of the 14th century. You know, the 1300s, the century when the bubonic plague struck Europe and wiped out 1/3 of the population. It's also the century that gave rise to the Great Schism, in which there was a French-favored pope at Avignon and a pope favored by England and everybody else at Rome. Clement in Avignon, Urban in Rome. And they were both as corrupt as the day is long, selling benefices, indulgences, and creating the atmosphere that eventually gave rise to the complete split, another schism, that left us with Protestantism, which was simply a slightly more decentralized version of Roman Catholicism. If you notice through history, Rome can't get along with anybody. Couldn't get along with the Greeks, so we have that schism. Can't get along with half of the... So they get dragged to Avignon by the French kings. The world wants the Pope back at Rome, so boom, another schism. Can't get along. Can't get along with a German monk. Schism, Protestantism. And yet they still have the unmitigated gall to suggest that this old Nazi anti-aircraft gunner, this former member of the Hitler Youth, has some sort of special connection to God, and I can completely understand George's manifest disgust. This note also rolling in from D. I was so happy to have you back on the air this week. Thank you, D. I have really enjoyed this week's shows. I started to call in last night, and then I saw what time it was and knew you wouldn't have time. Sorry. Maybe there'll be time tonight. There's always a possibility. I really enjoyed your call with one of your last callers. I'm sorry I can't think of her name. I think you're probably thinking of Tracy, D. Anyway, I've been thinking this all along, and now it is true. They're going to start bidding on water rights here in America. Not that this is new generally. They've been doing that in the so-called third world for years. I knew that this was going to get to us sooner or later, probably sooner. Dee says, I'm sure you're already on this, but if not, investing in water stocks, profit from the new water market. If there's going to be a new water market, and this is me editorializing, if there's going to be a new water market, does that mean that eventually Wall Street will have a water bubble or a water balloon? Dee says, looking forward to the show tonight. Thank you, Dee. The fact of the matter is, it's not a slogan. We're not selling bumper stickers. We don't have any coffee mugs with it on it. This is nothing but a 3 a.m. sweaty foreheaded call to what the Bible calls those who have ears to hear and eyes to see. They want it all. They want it all. Every last bit, every drop of water, every gasp of air, they want it all. You know, I heard Malloy last night reading that compendium of what historically has been done to greedy-ass bankers through the ages. Even the death penalty in the age of Hammurabi was not sufficient to stop them from preying upon people. You know why? Because the potential for wealth outweighs the risk of being caught. So even if a few people did get thrown in the Tigris or the Euphrates, even if a few bankers got caught and chopped into tiny pieces and had their constituent parts scattered to the corners of the realm, that just meant that there were some who didn't. I heard Malloy reading about Rule 70 of the Code of the City of Florence regarding bankers, and how they were, when caught, they were to be tortured. And that struck me as, yeah, don't threaten to kill them. They don't fear death, because they know that for every one that gets caught, there are 99 who get away. And, well, you know what? Them's pretty damn good odds. No. How many of us here, and I know we do, because I play at least one clip from it more often than I can consider or can count. How many Princess Bride fans in the audience? That magnificent little film with Robin Wright, Peter Falk, Fred Savage. Cary Elwes. It was an all-star cast. Andre the Giant. Right. Well, it struck me that there might be something instructive there. This is it. Don't say that we're... No. The only way you rein in predators is to make them understand that every day of their life after they've been caught is going to be nothing but sheer hell. Not something quick like a beheading. Sheer
hell.
Like this. I hope. Okay, well, we'll get there in a minute. God, I remember when YouTube didn't have an ad in front of every clip. Thanks, Google! Now I'm sure the connection will go down because I've criticized Google, right? Yeah. No, but you know what I'm talking about.
Don't you agree, Your Highness?
A technicality that will shortly be remedied. But first things first. To the death.
No! To the pain.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
I'll explain. And I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
That may be the first time in my life a man has dared insult me.
It won't be the last. To the pain means the first thing you lose will be your feet below the ankles. Then your hands at the wrists. Next, your nose.
And then my tongue, I suppose. I killed you too quickly the last time. A mistake I don't mean to duplicate tonight.
I wasn't finished. The next thing you lose will be your left eye, followed by your right.
And then my ears, I understand. Let's get on with it.
Wrong! Your ears you keep, and I'll tell you why. So that every shriek of every child at seeing your hideousness will be yours to cherish. Every babe that weeps at your approach, every woman who cries out, "Dear God, what is that thing?" will echo in your perfect ears. That is what the pain means. It means I leave you in anguish, wallowing in freakish misery forever.
I think you're bluffing.
It's possible, pig. I might be bluffing. It's conceivable, you miserable, vomitous mass. I'm only lying here because I lack the strength to stand. Then again, perhaps I have the strength after all.
And therein lies the question. That's us. Really. They think we're laying here because we lack the strength to stand. But do we? Understanding all the way to our toenails that they want it all, down to the water, down to the air, down to the whatever we might hope to collect for some sort of less than miserable old age. They want it all. Would that we had political leaders with spines, as our buddy Andy mentions, who would look at these predators and say, to the pain, not to the death, to the pain. You know, the Constitution prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. But when a member of the financial elite plunders not only the coffers, not only the accounts, but the very hopes and dreams of an entire segment of society, is to the pain cruel? Is it unusual? No, what is unusual is that any of these vomitous pigs, was that the line? Get punished at all. And what is cruel is to leave justice pleading in the name of their victims. A little correction rolling in from Dr. John. The Rochester Papers, the Democrat and Chronicle. What did I call it? Democrat and Gazette or something? Yeah. Morning Glory and Moral Volcano, Battle Cry of Freedom. God bless you, Mark Twain. Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, Dr. John. And the artist who drew the cartoon with Todd Akin, Too Legit to Quit, is John Darko. And it originally appeared in the Columbia, Missouri Daily Tribune. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. John. I appreciate that. Response coming in from Bermuda Sand. We heard from her last night. She said, I heard my email on the horn last evening, totally shocked. I've never done anything like that in my entire life. Can you answer a few questions for me? What is the difference between Medicare and Medicaid? Okay, that's easy. Medicare is an old age, supposedly, well, it's a retirement medical system that one presumably gets upon attaining the age of 65, and it is federally administered. Medicaid is a generic term used for a single-payer system funded by the federal government but administered by the several states. The states then set the parameters around which one may be covered by that. Okay? It's called by different names in different states. For instance, in Wisconsin, it's called Badger Care. In Tennessee, it was called Ten Care. That kind of thing. Here in West Virginia, we just call it Medicaid. Next question. Okay, so I'm one to the good. When a baby is born, are they not automatically insured by the government or a private insurer? No, Bermuda Sand, they're not. This is America. The right wing, the Repiglican Party, it gets all head up and hot and bothered and worried and concerned and loving about every baby on the planet that is still inside, or well, in the country. On the planet, but in the country in particular. I mean, they love them little unborn babies. But at postpartum, kid, you're on your own. Three. Wow. I haven't done this well on a test in... Three. What is the cost of health care for a family of four a month? Damn! I was doing so good. I can tell you that what the cost would be for us. And this is a family of five. The kinds of coverage that are available range from massive deductibles that cover next to nothing to so-called Cadillac plans. If I was to go out and try to privately purchase insurance for my family, it would likely run somewhere between $2,500 to $5,000 per month minimum. The reality. Most people work at wage levels, Bermuda Sand, that do not permit them to participate, to participate in an employer-offered health care plan because the copay for the employee would consume the best part, the biggest part of their paycheck. Think people who work at Walmart. You being in Bermuda, maybe you have not been blessed with Walmart yet. Have you? It's the single largest employer in the United States. Millions and millions of people working for maybe $8 an hour. No, Bermuda Sand says, please don't think these are silly questions. I'm just curious. No, those are not silly questions. We would be far better off if a lot of Americans would ask those questions. That's right, Michael, you are. Hammer time. Michael says, I'm in the wrong line of work, Bob. You really are, Michael. You really are. All right, Ron and Raleigh, I know how you are. That's all the note says. Hey, Bob, you know me. Yeah, I do.
Going for the dream that I have in store in my mind, and I know that I'm making it. I gotta get money, nobody's taking it. won't none. I hustle for my muscle, and you love me. Yeah, I'm going for all the lack of it. Kicking it at the top because I'm too legit to quit saying.
Okay, Ron, I gotta pull the fader up on that one, because if I don't, I'm gonna stop the show and sit down and start writing a parody. And I promise you, you do not want to hear me rap, because I mean we could do a Todd Akin rap with a total cornpone hillbilly accent, and whew, man, wouldn't that be something? It does appear that we are off and running on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, but I want to theme us up a little bit more. Now, many of you have may already have heard this. Robert in Australia just ran across this last night. I hadn't heard it either, because I haven't had much time to watch the program. I don't watch much TV anymore. I just don't. My brain won't let me. But apparently there is some mighty good work being done on a channel which, naturally, most Americans don't get and can't see. Talking about HBO. What I have here is a clip from, is it Aaron Sorkin? From Aaron Sorkin's latest offering called The Newsroom. Features Jeff Daniels as he starts out the series as sort of this burned out old Republican news anchor who gets a new producer and suddenly has a change of heart and starts trying to do really do news, and finds out along the way that everything the Republican Party is spewing is a bunch of filthy garbage. In other words, the truth. This clip has particular relevance, though. I watched it last night. The audio will do nicely. You don't have to have the visuals. And I wrote back to Robert after he sent it along and said, I don't know if you know it or not, but you just wrote tomorrow's show opening. See how you guys contribute even when you don't mean to? I hope you will forgive just a teensy, tiny, itsy, bitsy little bit of hubris on my part. No, it's just plain old pride. Because there are elements of this monologue, and I assure you I had never seen it before last night, that you have heard on this program. Hi, Aaron! I don't know. Probably not. But no, there are elements of this monologue, and the setup is that this is some sort of panel discussion in front of an audience about, and well, you'll hear it. And Jeff Daniels delivers the key
I guess you could call it a rant, couldn't you? Yeah, here we go.
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis? Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well, why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime.
Pay attention to what's coming here. I'm going to back this up for just a hair. You've got a liberal, that's the one who says diversity, and you've got, of course, a right-winger, freedom and freedom.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose.
If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So,
Belgium. That one. Yeah.
207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only three categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured diseases, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
Enough. That, of course, from Aaron Sorkin, who gave us The West Wing on NBC, whose latest offering is The Newsroom, which has to be relegated to the ghetto of HBO, which many of us don't get because it costs extra. I've never seen a full episode of The Newsroom because we don't have HBO. So no worries. No worries, America. There aren't going to be that many people who see or hear this kind of thinking, talking, acting, television making. Because it's over there on a four-pay channel while the rest of us are watching America Has Gas. Or you too could have a new plastic reconstructed nose. Or Ghosts and Ghoulies. Betsy noting, this is totally unrealistic. They're letting him finish a thought. Yeah, because the right winger would be screaming. If he was screaming nothing but freedom! 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 The Newsroom. I think it's on Sunday evenings on HBO. Yeah, see, at first Dr. John said, you have to tell me what this is. I missed where the clip you're playing is from. If it's a movie, I need to see it. But then as soon as I said the title, Dr. John wrote back and said, oh, The Newsroom. Screw that. Not going to buy into the HBO white privilege network. No.
And, you know, every now and then, I'll throw around the brown word, or somebody will drop an F-bomb. You know, F-bomb has recently entered the Oxford Dictionary of the English Language, that phrase, F-bomb. And we can do that because we're on the Internet. But because the occasional F-bomb gets dropped here, or because Bob occasionally gets frustrated and throws out the brown word, do you realize that every time those words get used would cost us $475,000? The fines went up in the immediate aftermath of Nipplegate and Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl, in which shocked right-wing parents wrote letters to their Congress critters saying, "What will we tell the children? My little precious pumpkin saw a Negro nipple." And so the fines went up. And Howard Stern left for satellite radio. And we sit here with the dreck that generally gets offered up on the over-the-air safe for children to watch networks. You know, the ones with the shows where people get gunned down. The content of what is offered there is brilliant as far as it goes. The statistics are real and verifiable. A pregnant mother has a better chance of surviving the birth of her child in Cuba than she does in the United States. And the baby born has a better chance of surviving in Cuba than in the United States. And you wonder why we do not normalize relationships with that island nation. Eventually, we will normalize relationships with Cuba, but we will do it only after everything in their entire social safety net has been dismantled and sold off to the highest bidder, whether it be Starbucks, McDonald's, or Marriott. Or maybe McDonnell Douglas, or Boeing, or GE, or General Dynamics, or Bechtel, or Halliburton. But then, and only then, will we have a normal, if you can call taking away every last vestige of anything that people have in a country, and reserving it unto their corporate masters, if you can call that normal. There is more than a little bit of unreality in that Jeff Daniels soliloquy, monologue, rant. The part where he talks about what we used to do, it's too easy. It is, in a word, facile. At the same time that we were being informed and we were doing those great things, people of color were drinking at different water fountains. Women had no choice but to bear the children that were forced upon them. Gay people lived in closets in fear for their very lives. And in that post-World War II boom generation, that greatest generation, we came to see ourselves as having a global right to drop any amount of munitions upon any people on the planet that we deemed deserved a good killin'. There are in excess of 55,000 names on the Vietnam Wall in Washington, but if we tried to write down the name of every Vietnamese we killed in that benighted conflict, the wall would stretch from the Lincoln Memorial all the way to the Capitol building. Because it is millions of names long. I said at the outset of the Iraq War that when we get around to making the Iraq War monument, after a sufficient number of Iraq War veterans have died, either there or back here from the illnesses, maladies, and madnesses that they brought home with them, that when we get around to building that monument, it should not be a wall. It should be done in the shape of an oil pipeline extending from the crotch of a statue of George W. Bush with a thought bubble coming out of his empty head that says, "He tried to kill my daddy." But while some of that speech is entirely too facile, there are other parts of it that are entirely true. Hey, wow, Bermuda Sand is in the chat room. Welcome! Glad to see you. Chat room's a wonderful and pleasant place to be. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. But that clip is a jumping-off place for where perhaps we will go on this thorn in the side Thursday. There's no monologue in this part, and yeah, you do kind of need the video, but let's see if you can guess what this is, maybe guess where it is simply by hearing it without seeing it.
I'm back.
Let's get everybody out here.
Back up.
Hey, push him back, bro. Get back.
I'm on the ground. I'm back. I'm not even on the ground.
Don't push him back. Look. Please. Turn around and look.
Everybody back to the corner.
Make sure you get his number.
You have to move now.
We just want to make sure you guys don't kill him. We just want to make sure you guys don't fucking kill him. I know this ain't Orange County, but you know what? We're just trying to make sure you don't kill him.
Come on, Martha, back to the stop sign. Let's go. Come on, oh my God.
God, really? All of them?
Now we've seen it all.
Wow. I just want to make sure you guys ain't going to fuck them up.
Yeah. They already had them subdued everything, and they just straight bombed on them.
Handcuffs and everything. They're bombed.
Ma'am, you got way over there.
My party's over here.
Thank you. Get out of the corner. Thank you. Back to the corner. Thank you. There you go. Watch your step.
Got a pretty good idea what happened? Ronald Weekly Jr. is 20 years old. He's a young man of color. And the Los Angeles Police Department took him down. He's a college student, by the way. The Los Angeles Police Department took him down for skateboarding on the wrong side of the street. Now, what you could not see, but you could hear, was the fact that there were citizens, United States citizens, with video cameras, who captured the event, in which Ronald Weekly Jr. was set upon by no less than five members of the Los Angeles Police Department, who drove him to the ground, and at one point, with him on the ground and his head in the grass, punched him in the face for skateboarding on the wrong side of the street. And bear in mind, there were some of those magic words in there that mean that it will not be properly understood in its full context in the for-profit media on the government-censored airwaves of the United States of America. Because, you know, you can say the F-word on HBO, but you can't say it on NBC. Because America's two delicate little ears. Perfect ears. Might somehow be damaged by hearing a word that they probably hear 100 times a day. This is America. This is America in 2012. This is America in 2012 when it takes five police officers to subdue one 20-year-old skateboarder who didn't need subduing in the first place, and no less than three cruisers and more on the way, and a cadre of police officers, Latino, Asian, African-American, white, to push back people from documenting their excesses. Hundreds of people came together today, or last night rather, last night in L.A., to protest the beating of Ronald Weekly Jr., because, you see, Ronald Weekly Jr. came out of jail. Jail? For skateboarding? On the wrong side of the street? F me running. Skateboarding's a jailing offense now? Locomotion is criminal in this country if you're not using an internal combustion. God almighty. Yeah, he got out of jail with a broken cheekbone, a broken nose, and a concussion. Interviewed by Reuters, he said, "I thought I was going to die. The only thing going through my mind was that I was going to die on my front porch in front of my family and friends." He was at home skateboarding on the wrong side of the street. Isn't An excessive show of force, one of those defining characteristics of fascism? Ron in Raleigh, writing, wow, a new offense, skateboarding while black. Remember, Bob, white people are the victims of all the racism in America today. Oh, exactly. Ron also noted, we of the Horn family often say they want it all. I have come to the conclusion that a better appellation would be they believe they deserve it all. What do you think? And by the way, yes, I can say this. If you want to see the newsroom, it's out there to be watched. You just got to look around a little bit. They believe they deserve it all. You know, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but I think that is the motivation. But the reality is that they want it all. They want it all. Even the very space in which we move in front of our home. They want it all. We clear on that? Certainly hope so. So that brings us to the end, perhaps some will say the merciful end, of the filibobster for this evening. It's time to light up the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333, if you want to save us the toll-free freight charges. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. Yeah, Irish Dave noting, so video phones are not covered by the Second Amendment, like, you know, swords and stuff that you can carry in your hand, because remember, Fat Tony Scalia, you're right, Dave, Fat Tony Scalia noted that grenade launchers may be legal under the Second Amendment because they are portable. Yeah. So we'll take our top of the hour break. It is Thursday. That means we have Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen to look forward to, and the Green News Report. It's on the way. Light up the phones and let's get the conversation started. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and they're sticking pretty good. Conversation radio is what we do here, and it's done best not by me ranting, but by us conversing. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
wide awake, they won't let me alone. They don't get paid to take vacations, so let me alone. They spy on me, I try to hide, they won't let me alone. They persecute me, they're the judge and jury.
Preparing for the future means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, August 23, 2012.
Look, I like wind and solar like the next person, but I don't want the law to be used to stop the production of oil and gas and coal.
The Republican approach is essentially written by or dictated by big oil.
A Green News special report. Mitt Romney's energy agenda. Oil, oil, and more oil. Plus,
we're prepared. We know what the plans are. We have our staff in place. We'll see what Isaac brings.
A hurricane of irony threatens the Republican National Convention in Tampa.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You know, I can see Obama sending FEMA in advance of the hurricane hitting Tampa. So that the Republican Convention is nothing but a bunch of tents.
Yes, nothing but a bunch of something.
Make it look like a disaster area before the hurricane even hits there.
Done. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, I think that one thing is clear. God hates the Republican National Convention.
It's quite odd, isn't it?
Yeah, back in 2008, you may recall, the first day of the convention was scotched after Hurricane Gustav came barreling into Louisiana. And here we are, looking down the barrel of Tropical Storm Isaac as it barrels towards Tampa for this Monday, the start of this year's Republican National Convention.
Oh, the irony. But more on that in a moment. First, just days before the Republican National Convention gets underway in Tampa, Florida.
Maybe.
On Thursday, at a campaign speech in Hobbs, New Mexico, presumptive GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney unveiled his energy agenda, which focuses, not surprisingly, on more oil, gas, and coal, promising, quote, energy independence for North America by 2020.
By 2020, we won't need to buy any oil from the Middle East or Venezuela or anywhere else where we don't want to.
From these energy plan reads like a wish list for the oil industry, focusing on more drilling everywhere. He loosens environmental regulations, aggressively expands offshore drilling, even forcing it on states that don't want it. He opens up ANWR, the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge, to oil drilling and expands drilling on federal public lands, except he puts the states in charge instead of federal oversight. Romney keeps billions in annual taxpayer subsidies for the oil industry, but cuts subsidies for the clean energy industry, including the crucial wind energy production tax credit that expires at the end of this year.
That is very popular, by the way, with Republicans and Republican governors around the country.
Yes, and that's because states like Iowa and Colorado have very strong wind energy industries. Romney's plan for North American energy independence is based on relying on Canada.
Canada has oil sands. We're going to take advantage of those and build that Keystone Pipeline and work with Canada to make sure we have advantage of their great energy sources.
Of their really heavy, sticky, disgusting, dirty oil sands. And by the way, I thought he was in favor of energy independence, but he's relying on countries like Canada and Mexico?
Yes, and that's the slippery language that he's using. When he says North American energy independence, he really means dependence on foreign oil from Canada, not homegrown American energy sources like wind and solar. He barely even mentioned clean energy, except to say he would kill the successful federal loan guarantee program for clean energy companies and would end any federal policy that boosts renewables over oil.
Look, I like wind and solar like the next person. But I don't want the law to be used to stop the production of oil and gas and coal. I want to promote energy innovation. I don't want the government investing in companies. I want instead to have our government investing in basic science and research.
Investing in science and research, unless that science and research concerns renewable energy like wind and solar. Apparently.
Basically, yes. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney criticized Romney's energy plan for focusing exclusively on fossil fuels.
What distinguishes the president's all-of-the-above approach to our energy future is that the Republican approach is essentially written by or dictated by big oil, and focuses almost entirely on oil and fossil fuels.
And that they aggressively pursue nuclear energy, imaginary clean coal, and so forth. Just to be fair, there's a lot of nonsense written into the Obama energy policy as well.
Yes, but also to be fair, Carney noted that President Obama's policies have doubled renewable energy production in the U.S., and he's also expanded domestic production of oil. Even oil billionaire T. Boone Pickens blasted Romney's plan on MSNBC.
All they talk about is oil. Oil, drill off the East Coast, West Coast, federal lands, everything.
Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah.
Of course, the one thing Romney didn't even mention, climate change.
What climate change?
Exactly. Speaking of climate change, also on its way to the Republican National Convention in Tampa is Tropical Storm Irony. Tropical Storm Isaac.
Very good.
Now in the Caribbean, forecast models predict that Isaac could hit Florida as a hurricane on Monday or Tuesday, the opening day of the RNC, unless it veers away. City officials are taking it very seriously because a worst-case scenario shows storm surge would drown the Tampa Convention Center under 20 feet of water. But the unspoken issue here is that a widespread evacuation of Tampa, like most metropolitan areas, would be, shall we say, extremely difficult.
Wow. Fingers crossed, hoping for the best down there in Tampa. For more on that story as it develops and all of the other ones we didn't have time to cover today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to keep telling you the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten past the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I have to give the time because they drummed me out of the worn-out, tired old DJ union if I didn't. Oh, mercy. Willard Romney says he wants to invest in basic science. Well, okay, Willard. How about getting on board with the AIC Act, H.R. 5959, that would invest in some basic science to find out why the coal industry, how the coal industry, the mountaintop removal industry in particular, is poisoning people who live near mountaintop removal sites. That's very basic science. That's really not simple, but yeah, basic. Can we, Willard? No, I didn't think you'd get on board. Your masters would not like that. Willard, does Bain Capital and the money you make, does Bain have any coal money? Would somebody look into that, pretty please? Thanks. Jeez. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, you know, I would chat a little bit to you, but to be honest, I was calling because I'm at my poverty wage job, and I'm wondering if you could put me on hold to listen to this show. I'm obnoxious, I know.
No, that's not obnoxious. You are far from the first to ever do that, Sandra, and I'm more than happy to do it.
Okay, well, anyway, listen, that bit you played, wow, in L.A., really out of control, the pigs. You know that police brutality is like the engine of social unrest in this country. You know, when King was assassinated, people were like, oh, they're rioting. But the reason the riots really happened was just the long history of police brutality. And that was just sort of a cataclysmic sort of event.
That was the match to the fuse, exactly.
Right, and it's the same thing happening again. It's just like lessons are never learned. I mean, this shit should only go on, you know, and when you see it explode, remember, it's the pigs attacking regular folks and poor people and mainly people of color. It can't go on forever. I mean, people will get tired of it, and, you know, Anaheim, you see that. L.A. is always a tinderbox. I mean, it's just, I just am sort of gobsmacked by the plan is always the same, you know?
Well, it is, and, you know, hey, let's give the LAPD credit. You know, they've gone for diversity in their department now, so it's not just white folks beating on persons of color. They've co-opted the various communities to make sure that there's a recognizable face doing the beating.
Well, then that's that. That's the little Eichmann. You know, that's totalitarianism 101. So we're beyond the face of the fascists are all sorts of color, and especially in America. That sort of would be uniquely American fascist, wouldn't it?
On some level. Yeah, uniquely American. And see, there's this generational thing, Sandra. Is anybody thinking? I mean, I know that on some sort of subconscious Freudian level, the lily white GOP is motivated toward probably 99% of its actions because it knows way down deep in its little lizard brain, it knows that white folks are not going to be the majority for a hell of a lot much longer. And what happens when we're not?
Well, that's why I think that the rapid, you know, along with removing trillions of dollars out of the country, literally, and this sort of effort to dismantle what's left of government services from the city on up is half a response to the pending demographic change. I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, all laid out by design, but this country has always had a history of, you know, from the Homestead Act to affirmative action, you know, when it's not directed towards white people, it becomes a problem. But up until then, all the help from government is fine. It's only when it changes color, then all of a sudden it has to be ended. I mean, you hear the Republicans, they're always going on about, well, we're not going to touch you if you're over 60, 55. You know what that means.
Oh,
because most of
it isn't that class warfare in and of itself?
Yeah, but I'm just saying, it's not like, you know, I don't know what the percentage of that cohort is of color, but trust me, majority of them are white, because unfortunately, you know, people of color work so damn hard, they keel over before it's time to collect.
Sad but true.
I'm kind of being facetious, because, you know, my mother has, you know, she gets all whatever is available for herself, so I probably shouldn't be so disingenuous, but you get the idea.
Oh, yes, I do, and I don't think it's statistically inaccurate either.
But I don't, I'm just so sick of every, you know, it really seems to be accelerating the sort of pig gone wild stories. I mean, it's just out of control now, don't you think?
Well, it is, and you counter it, I guess, or contrast it, I think, would be the more appropriate word, with stories like that thing out of Louisiana, where the sheriff's deputies go knock on a door, and a bunch of skinhead white folks open up with semi-automatic weapons through the door.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're paranoid, the white folks are paranoid, and folks of color can't skateboard. I mean, Ron and Raleigh nailed it. You know, skateboarding while black is a crime now?
No, and when you do get an example of some black person with a gun, they're shot up 40 times, like that poor grandmother. Remember her?
Oh, yeah, in Atlanta.
And they shot her dead, and she was just sitting in a chair.
Well, dude with a knife in Saginaw, Michigan the other night?
Yep, and the guy in Times Square, he had a knife, too. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I just, the police apparatus is too much.
Well, it's fascism. It just is. I mean, I don't know at what point we have to have. I mean, we're using the word here. I know it's being used on other programs as well. At what point does the for-profit media give us permission to use the word?
Well, I thought that was really. Who commented that they don't want to be bothered with white privilege HBO?
Oh, that was Dr. John.
Well, I mean, and it's also very infantile, but I think it just sort of goes with the plan of the powers that be. You know, that, like you said, you can gun down people nightly on TV, but, you know, the words that you and I and everybody else use daily is somehow not okay. I think it's just another mode of social control.
Sure it is.
And it's so
and let's, like, you know, let's remember, and you know this well because, you know, you've been across the pond, Sandra. This is not necessarily the case in the rest of the civilized world. You can say certain words on television in Great Britain, in Australia, in Japan, in New Zealand, in Germany, Italy, France, what have you. But because this country is, and maybe that's the thing we haven't quite, and I'm guilty too, I talk about they want a theocracy, but when you've got a country that can't even allow the speech of the common people onto the common people's public airwaves, then don't you already have a de facto theocracy? Because that's what is driving this. That's what drove the wardrobe malfunction hissy. All those right-wing legislators who were shocked by the side of a breast.
No, but it's so true. If you want to pay the $20 a month for HBO, you know, you can hear all that you want and see all the titties that you want. But it's just on ABC, for some reason, you know, you can't. Yeah, I just think that is, you know, by design, like you're saying, it just appeals to, I don't know, it's just really infantile, though, you know. It's sort of like, you know, I don't know, I can't pronounce the guy's name, Tasha somebody from the Atlanta Monthly, the black writer who writes there.
Yeah.
You know, he wrote this long piece about, you know, the irony of the black president. And, I mean, it's a really long article. It's very interesting. But one thing that he talked about was, you know, how infantile it is to deal with white folks, basically, which is why Obama is just on eggshells permanently. Now, he wasn't making an excuse for him, but he was just pointing out the long history of shuffling and yes-a-bossing that has gone along with how whites and blacks deal. And why would that change when you have a president?
Well, isn't there, and you know, here in 2012, isn't there a relatively popular song that's out there, Every Day I Be Shuffling?
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah, it's a takeoff from Ross, the rapper from Florida, Every Day I'm Hustling.
Yeah.
He just sort of turned around to that. I mean, the Every Day I'm Hustling song is a bit different than them idiots talking about I'm sexy, but I get what you're saying. I
mean, but, I think we still, the first thing I thought of when I saw the story of this young man being beaten within an inch of his life for being on a skateboard on the sidewalk was, you know, one, this is L.A., and we know that the L.A. cops have a history of brutality, but still, there's a lot of us progressives, liberals in other parts of the country that kind of look to California as some sort of hopeful future, but stirring, stunning reminder that no, it ain't what, you know, it ain't what it's cracked up to be all over. But the other thing that got me was, well, son of a gun, it's a skateboard step-off rule, isn't it? I mean, if there'd been skateboards in Mississippi in 1950, wouldn't that have been part of the step-off rule?
I mean, California is they're notorious for the police acting up. I mean, and they keep the latest program here that's got me really disturbed is, you know how the court said you gotta depopulate the prison because there's too many people here?
Yeah.
In the prison? Well, Jerry Brown has decided, well, we're gonna put all those people into the county jail. So the jails are filling up, and he still needs to reduce it by another 12,000, and he's balking at that. But, and so you have the L.A. jail, which is, I think it's the biggest jail in the country. Well, it's gotten about 1,100 people bigger. And, I mean, that's the model that, when you look to California, you're seeing now. I mean, they're not releasing these people like they should. They're just finding other areas to pack them in so they can satisfy the court order. But they're not.
Yeah, and meanwhile, down in Tampa, I think I mentioned this talking with Juanita last night or the night before. The mayor of Tampa has ordered an entire jail cleared out to hold nothing but people who dare to protest at the RNC, and they said straight out, we're not going to tolerate much more than chanting and sign waving. So,
well, and I mean, so and what the regular public is sitting around saying, yeah, make sure you're tough on those people. I mean, is that where we're at now?
I would suspect that's probably true, Sandra.
Well, and you have that. I mean,
because we've got a nation of Archie Bunkers out there now.
Yeah, a lot of scared people, I think.
Yeah.
And then you have my favorite is that horrible sheriff, I guess, is speaking at the convention from Arizona. I mean,
Wait, stop. They gave Arpaio a speaking slot?
Yeah, I saw that empty wheel had tweeted that, and I just thought, well, they really want that Latino vote. They're working hard. So it makes me think that is the fix really in, because this war on women, fuck the Latinos, and on and on. I mean, who are they going to get to vote for? I'm really trying to figure it out. Do you know?
White folks and their votes count four for everybody else. Is this the year we're going to see the formal rejuvenation of the three-fifths rule, Sandra?
Well, I'm just wondering because, see, I just don't see, if you're looking at normal political activities, would say Obama in a landslide. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But their platform is like the Taliban, and they hate brown people, and it's just on and on and on. So, in reality, they should get very few votes.
I mean, what was it, 2-3 days ago, Paul Ryan actually went on TV on KDKA in Pittsburgh and reaffirmed that he supports a personhood amendment.
Yeah, he actually owned up to it, really?
Yeah, I got the audio right here.
Yeah, so I'm trying to understand, well, what do they know that we don't? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's not paranoia. That's just straight up trying to understand the process. And I think you and I probably know the answer. what they know is that these voter suppression laws are going to have a profound impact. You know, it doesn't matter. He didn't need Marco Rubio because he can dummy up the results with the video game voting in Florida. It's going to be suppressed in Pennsylvania. It's going to be suppressed in Alabama. It's going to be. And
well,
I guess.
You know, so.
Go ahead.
Oh no! So yeah, I'm. That's the only thing I have to keep asking myself, because I don't know if you get a chance. Just read the bit of the platform dealing with reproductive rights. I mean, you'll be running screaming. I know I was. I mean, it's a horror show.
Well, I mean, yeah, it includes no, there's no rape and incest exception.
Right.
All women must carry all babies to term.
And the one, you know, they're all talking about, you know, anything to put a roadblock by these states, you know, all that. It's incredible. I'm going to watch some of the convention just as a train wreck type thing, because I can't believe all the different people they have speaking, the horror show.
Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a late addition isn't this creepy judge out of Texas. You know about him, right?
Oh, God, what's the deal? What did he do?
Judge Tom Head. No, his name really is Head. I don't know if his campaign slogan is "Give me head" or "Give us head," but you know, Judge Tom Head of Lubbock County, Texas, has said on Fox 34, which is one of the news channels down there. Naturally, it's Fox. He's going to, talking about President Obama, of course. He's going to try to hand over the sovereignty of the United States to the UN, and what is going to happen when that happens? I'm thinking the worst: civil unrest, civil disobedience, civil war, maybe. And we're not just talking about, if you've got riots here and there, demonstrations. We're talking Lexington Concord, take up arms and get rid of the guy. Now, what's going
on? I heard that. I'm thinking, shouldn't he have a knock on the door about right now? What's the hold up?
Well, you said a couple of minutes ago, Sandra, Barack Obama's walking around on eggshells.
Well, I know, but it's just like, you know, how many times have we heard stuff that if they had said about Bush, they would have rounded up folks?
Yeah, and they did.
That poor lady from the Dixie Chick, they probably destroyed their career.
Well, they threatened to kill them.
Yeah, and he had radio stations not playing their music. I mean, economically attacking them, politically attacking them, the whole nine yards, yet we have this Hank Williams, I mean, saying God knows what about Obama, and it's just kind of like, I guess it's...
That's why I keep trying to talk about these things. Now, naturally, Judge Head says, onward to dystopia, noting in the chat room, he says, it sounds like this judge has been listening to Alex Jones. Yes, it does.
It blew you in, because they don't know anything about, trust me, the UN. They don't know nothing about the UN unless they listen to Alex Jones. They're certainly not reading textbooks on it.
No, yeah, but you know where all this UN stuff is coming from, right, Sandra? I mean, you know. It's Agenda 21.
Well, I don't even know what Agenda 21 is. You know, it's not, it's completely benign. I can't believe how they've contorted that poor paper, but anyway.
Well, it only looks benign. This is how they're going to take our sovereignty. And so you've got the sovereign citizen movement. You've got the Republican Party of Virginia calling for armed revolution on, what, November 7th, if they don't get Romney in. You've got this goon in Lubbock, Texas, swearing that he's ready to dig the trenches and roll out the razor wire to make sure that the Obama's UN troops can't take Lubbock. I mean, Jesus, what's next? I mean, am I gonna fire up the computer one morning and find some right wing idiot standing on a mountain screaming Wolverines? You know, like it's Red Dawn or something.
Well, I don't really know, but I know my black ass is gonna be inside on inaugural day. I'm not feeling the oh, yay, Obama's president anymore. You know, that ship has sailed, and it's time to hunker down.
Yeah, no kidding. It's frightening.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm being a bit facetious. I mean, I hope it's not getting to that point, but...
No, but I mean, consider, not that I'm trying to make myself some sort of poster child, consider where I am. You think I'm wearing me an Obama t-shirt down to get me a loaf of bread and a jar of peanut butter? Oh, hell no!
Well, I had been and scraped off shit on my car, you know, because it's just too much. It's too many crazies out there. But listen, that bitch you played from the newsroom, you know, there was, some of it was good, but you know, that also falls under the sort of infantilization of everything, because what are you talking about when we used to do this, that, another, and
right.
you laid it out what the problem was with that whole speech, but I don't know, I mean, I hear that show is pretty good, I always...
Well, it's Aaron Sorkin, and he doesn't know how to do bad TV.
Oh, no, I was, you know...
Yeah, this is the West Wing moved into a newsroom.
Yeah, I think I've seen every episode of West Wing. Funny how the West Wing was on NBC, though. You know,
yeah.
You know that? You know what I'm saying?
And the right wing hated it.
Oh, yeah, they hated it, but it was still on. But whereas now you get Stars and Stripes shoot up a people, or whatever show that is, that's just horrific, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, there's been an ownership change in the interim. You know, what is it, what cable company owns Comcast owns NBC now? So
no, but this show, the Strike, whatever the military show with, what's that general that's doing it? Wesley Clark, and they got celebrities pretending that they're, you know, at war. It's just horrifying. I can't believe that show is on.
Well, again, you know, that's just another little check mark box for me on my list of are we fascist yet?
Yeah, you definitely can add that in. Like you said, you know, not watching much TV. I know I'm right there with you. It's sad, but it's so true. Well, anyway.
Well, I do have to tell you, I got to tell you before you go that there's at least a little bit of good news. Agnes and I were listening to the radio in the car the other day. And we heard some NPR report about Paul Ryan talking to some a group of, you know, white folks who cling to God, their guns and their religion up in Pennsylvania. And, of course, that I mention that because that phrase was brought out, you know, because there was Ryan, the Ryan soundbite was, well, I just want you to know I'm a Catholic deer hunter. And I didn't know if that meant he only hunts Catholic deer. Or maybe he kills Protestant deer, or he's a Catholic who hunts deer. God only knows what that meant. But he entered the room, Sandra, to the strains of Dee Snider screaming, we're not gonna take it, you know, and the drum beat and everything, Twisted Sister. And Agnes looks at me and goes, well, I figure the Romney-Ryan campaign will be getting a letter from Dee in about 10, 9, 8, 7. And so, lo and behold, I called her in here yesterday before showtime. I said, you were right, honey. Because the letter had gone out from Dee Snider to the Romney Ryan campaign. Quit using my effing song. I hate your effing guts.
Listen,
okay, he didn't say that, but it was a little nicer. But that was the upshot.
Well, I'm still trying to Google his ex-black girlfriend. That's what I want to know about.
Well, and apparently there's a mixed marriage somewhere in his immediate family. But see that. That's credibility. You know, no, see, we don't hate the dark-skinned people. Our vice presidential nominee once dated one. You know, that's like some of my best friends are, right?
No, I mean, that's why I tweeted, well, my college sweetheart was a really white dude, but I'm still a racist bitch.
Jesus, you're awful. You know that.
At any rate, listen, you going to put me on hold?
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold.
Out.
No, we'll put you on hold. Stand by, Sandra. Thanks. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye. Sandra, on the job and calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
Hi, this is Harry in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Harry. Good to hear from you again, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You're very kind. As you know, I think this is only my second time talking with you, and I appreciate you taking my call.
No thanks at all needed. I appreciate you making it, believe me.
Oh, well, thank you. And I even called in on your non-toll-free line. So hopefully, I don't know if that actually, does that actually save you money?
Yeah. It means that we're not racking up 6 cents a minute.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I'm glad I did that. I'm happy to do it. Without discounting, you know, or dismissing any of the issues that you've brought up tonight and that have been brought up by your callers and people in the chat room, I was very struck by some things you said at the very beginning of the show. And, well, first of all, let me say I'm a big fan of The Princess Bride, very big fan.
I just love it.
I do, too. And, in fact, I must confess that when I'm feeling very down and depressed about what's going on in society, I actually watch the movie because for some reason it seems to uplift me at times, you know. There's something about the...
Well, the cast was magic. The storyline is classic, and the performances were simply flawless.
yes. And of course, William Goldman is just a wonderful writer and screenwriter, so it's hard to beat. But, you know, there's also something really sort of almost idealistic even in the humor in there, you know, about loyalty and commitment. And it's, you know, and of course, you know, the bad guys, you know, getting defeated by their own, you know, foolishness and arrogance in the end. So.
Well, and of course, that's a classic theme that begins with the ancient Greeks and comes forward.
Yes, you're probably right. Well, you probably know that better than I do, but yes, I think that's you're absolutely right about that. I also was struck, you know, what you were saying in the beginning, and maybe people don't want, you know, this is sort of a more broader issue, you know, about, frankly, you were talking about the 1%, frankly, you know, wanting it all, and you were emphasizing the all, and and this is not the first time that you've talked about that, but this is something, you know, that personally really does hit me very strongly, and I've had some personal experiences recently, and again, I certainly don't want to get too maudlin for your audience or people in the chat room. But
I'll let you know if the maudlin meter goes off, Harry. You just go in.
I appreciate it because, you know, and frankly, I've had some wonderful experiences interacting with people in the chat room, and
we're having, by the way, some technical difficulties in there. People keep getting booted. There's something wrong with the system.
Weird. Well, I'm sorry to hear, but I guess why I mentioned that is because I know that there are some people in the chat room, you know, who when their style of dealing with their frustration is to frankly very sort of sharp and witty in a very either satirical or sarcastic way, and I'm more, unfortunately, sort of more introverted and introspective, and so I, you know, get kind of I sort of get upset by being contemplative and worrying.
Yeah, I understand. I do my fair share of that too, Harry.
Right. So when I, you know, get upset, I'm sort of always more thinking in perhaps even in a more too dry kind of a way, I mean, even a sort of a cerebral way about, you know, what is going on?
Well, lucky for you, this is a place that does cerebral, so you know, don't be afraid.
Well, I must tell you, no, I think you do cerebral extremely well. I'm always in awe of your knowledge and, you know, your overall erudition. It is just truly impressive. But what I wanted to mention was, and let me just start here with, I recently was. Had been doing some research into, and I'm not sure how, well, anyway, into this whole, you know, what is going on in society in terms of the 1% and this terrible greed, you know, factor that you were mentioning and how these people seem to want it all. And, you know, I certainly think, you know, and the problem is that we're not just talking about, you know, they want it all from, let's say, you know, the people who are the most vulnerable, let's say the working class. But, you know, I think you may have mentioned this last night in your show, but, you know, this new Pew report saying that the middle class has lost lots of ground just since 2000 is truly, well, it's troubling, but also it confirms, you know, what I myself have been certainly, experiencing in my own life and in the people I know around here, you know, and I live here in Washington, D.C., which supposedly, you know, is supposed to be having a better economy than other regions in the country. And, you know, yet, but the problem is, you know, if you have a whole middle class, or, you know, the way the Pew Center report said it, that basically, you know, they're losing ground in, you know, assets, and I'm not sure what else. I haven't read the report, but it basically was
They say it was the worst decade for the middle class, ever?
Yes, exactly. That's right, ever. And that's, you know, and boy, that you know, if you step back and think about it, that is really, really troubling. You know, there's something really disturbing about that.
And well, I have to share this because it's breaking news, Harry.
Yeah.
I just came across one of the former.